Now can you hear me? I think that's an advertisement, isn't it? Back a number of months ago when I met with Kai and Renee and we were talking about what they would like to do for the next series of teachings and everything, and they were settling on the Gospel of John, with which I concurred, but not terribly excited. It's always been my least favorite of the Gospels. I won't go into all the reasons, but I want to say that I have really, really been blessed, challenged, and enjoyed the series. I have loved Renee and Kai's teachings. By the way, please pray for them. They're wonderful people that are serving us. And I've enjoyed preparing my own and doing them. Today, which will be my last time with the Gospel of John, I want to talk about, from John chapter 21, an event that happens around a campfire. Jesus seems to have spent quite a bit of time around campfires in his ministry life and probably before that. This could also be titled Jesus and Peter's Spiritual Formation Journey, because I'm going to go back through the Gospel of John for a little while along the way. John presents Peter's personality very much the same way that all the gospel writers do. They all tell us things about Peter, and basically his very courageous and very straightforwardness, as well as his tendency to talk a little too much sometimes and be a little out of order at times. But John tells us different events, which gives credence to the fact that he may have written later and already have seen some of the other gospels, because he really does pick, for the most part, different events than what the others tell us about. So we're going to look at some of those different events today. And for those of you who have been here during the series, we met Peter first in the Gospel of John when his brother Andrew brought him, back in the very first chapter of John, brought him to Jesus. And this very unusual thing happens, but Jesus did with this with several people. He said, well, I'm going to give you a different name. And I've always wondered what, you know, it's clear to the book of Revelation, which says God's going to give us a new name. And we're going to sing a song later today called So Beautiful, How Could We Not Believe? And there's a line in there about, it's so wonderful to be freed from my name. And when we first sang that, I thought, what's that? And then I realized that many of us, and one person who, for whom this was really true, my father, grow up in situations where our name is a real burden. And my father, the name Simpkins, was a real burden because his father was a murderer. And so he carried, and it had to be incredible the day whenever he realized that God had changed things in his life enough that he was proud of his last name, and he raised me to be proud of my last name. And in some very real sense, God had given him a new name, a name that was much more who he was than the one that society gave him because of what his father had done. Well, Peter got a new name, and it was Rock or Rocky. Sometimes he was just like that, and sometimes he wasn't. But it was a claim by Jesus to know Peter really better than Peter knew himself. And I think that's a claim that runs all through the life of Jesus and still today, that you're actually known by God and by Jesus better than you know yourself. And he wants to give you a new name. The next time we have a direct encounter with Peter in the Gospel of John is in John 6. Jesus is taught. 5,000 people, he's fed them, they want to make him king. And, you know, Jesus never knew how to quit when he was ahead. So here he is, everybody's saying, king, king, he'd be great. And so he just keeps talking. And he talks about being the bread of heaven, and you're going to have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And people start scratching their heads and saying, I mean, you know, I still wrestle with those phrases, I suspect, even though I now understand them differently because of what happened in the cross and resurrection. By the time Jesus gets through, even people who really, really were wanting to be his disciples are leaving and going away. And so Jesus turns to his inner circle and he says to them, Do you want to leave too? And being the person who speaks first and spokesperson for the others, Peter speaks up for himself personally, but also for the group, and says, "Lord, to whom can we go? You have the words of the life of the age to come," or often translated eternal life. "We've come to trust and to know that you are the Holy One of God." To put it in my own words about what I think Peter's feeling, he's confused. There's a part of him that would like to leave. It's been confusing. It's sad to see what you thought was this incredible success just turn into, ugh, everybody's going away, everybody's shaking their head. But there's this other part of him, and again, I'll reference the song that the worship corps is going to sing in a little while. There's this other part of him that sees Jesus and who Jesus is and what Jesus has to say and how he acts as so beautiful. How can we not believe? And he often gets back to that point, as he does here. Where else would I go? You're the only life I ever found. And, you know, for me personally, that's the bottom line of my faith. There are times when life is confusing, frustrating. I hardly understand anything about what I'm supposed to understand about God or about Jesus in the real world. But that's the only life I've ever seen. And I've watched a lot of people as well as myself. The only real life I've ever seen. Well, that's what Peter has to say. And the next time that we have a direct event and direct encounter with Peter in the Gospel of John, skips all the way to the last Seder, what we call the Last Supper, or the beginning of the communion and Eucharist. And at this Seder, which turns out to be just a time when Peter's strengths and weaknesses are just out there, and, you know, aren't yours and aren't mine, when things are tense and when things are in crisis and when life is all confusing but also exciting and we're not sure which way it's going to go, that's when I see my strengths and weaknesses. I suspect you do too, and sometimes so close side by side that it's astounding. Well, that's exactly what happens here with Peter. Oops, did I go backwards? Yes. The events that occur here that are recorded are, first of all, Jesus washes the disciples' feet. Peter, I think being the leader that he is, this time gets to the end of the line. And when they get there, he kind of one-ups everybody else, and he says, "Oh, not me." Now, that could sound very humble, but rather ego-centered in some ways. I'm the only one who knows enough not to let this happen in front of all his buddies. And Jesus says, "Well, you know, that attitude can get you outside the circle, buddy." And Peter says, "Oh, then wash me all over." Still a little bit one-up, right? And Jesus said, "No, you're one of the group. Everybody needed a foot washing. Nobody was going to do it. I do it. You're in, we're in, we're good." Then Jesus goes on in this really tense situation and says, "But somebody's going to betray me, somebody right here in this room." And Peter tries to find out who, and he can't find out who, and he's whispering around trying to find out. But then Jesus says, "You know, I love you all. I want you to love each other. But I'm about to go away, and where I'm going, you can't follow." And so this event with Peter and his personality and his spiritual formation with Jesus, Peter responds and says, "Lord, what do you mean I can't follow you? Why? You know I'd give my life for you. That's how much I love you. That's how much I care for you. That's how committed I am to following you. I'd give my life for you." And I want to just underline, he meant every word of it, and it was the truth. He tries to do that just a few minutes later, or a few hours later. And Jesus responds, and it's got to be confusing. Jesus responds and says, "Will you? You're going to deny me three times before the cock crows," which apparently was the way the Romans kept time for the city. That's their last direct conversation before Jesus is executed. Now, you know, most of us kind of value our last conversation with a dear loved one right before they die. And people are often heartbroken when the last one is not good and goes badly. Well, this one didn't go well. This one ends on a really sour note. It's the last direct talk they have before Jesus is taken away. But Peter does mean what he says. He said, I'll die for you. They end up out in the garden. Jesus is praying. The Roman soldiers come, the ones who are the police guard for the high priest. They start arresting Jesus. Peter pulls a concealed carry is not a new thing. Peter pulls a sword out from under and starts swinging around in the midst of all. I mean, that's crazy courageous. In the middle of all these soldiers who are highly trained. And Jesus isn't real impressed with it. In fact, it says Peter cut off the ear of one of them, and Jesus heals him and says, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, which I think is a very profound statement. Actually, if you gain your power by might and violence, that's exactly how you'll lose it in the long run. Somebody else will come along who will do the same. That's been world history, right? It's just a statement about reality. That had to leave Peter in a strange place. I mean, he meant it. I'll die for you. Which he was really about to do. And yet Jesus doesn't really approve. And still he's courageous. He, and I'm in quotes, John, the man is called the one who Jesus is really committed to in the gospel, we'll say it's John. They follow Jesus right into the center of the high priest's court. The trial, I mean, it took a lot of guts to do that under the circumstances. And then this too. I mean, you know, maybe they were still hoping that Jesus will pull it off. He'll do something and it'll be incredible and everything will go the way we think it's supposed to go. But it pretty soon becomes evident that it's not going to, that in fact he's going to be executed. And as that begins to really become clear, and Peter begins to be identified by people standing around as one of Jesus' followers, Peter does, in fact, without thinking, just in the crisis, in the confusion, three different times say, I never knew the guy, I never knew them. And then the cock crows. Maybe it's midnight, that's probably what it meant. Maybe it's 3 a.m. John leaves it there. Luke says that just as that happened, they led Jesus out of the chambers, and he looks at Peter eye to eye, doesn't say a word, and Peter just starts bawling because he realizes what he had done and what had happened. Lots happens, but the next time we encounter Peter in the Gospel of John, Mary Magdalene is at the door where the disciples are hiding because they're afraid of the police, the army. And she says, the tomb's empty. I've been there and there's no Jesus body isn't there. And Peter and John go running to the tomb, and kind of one of those little incidental things that says, John was the fastest and he got there first, but he didn't go in. Peter comes and runs right on in. I mean, again, he's the impetuous one. He's the one that just goes right in. They find the clothes all folded up nicely. Over the next 2 weeks, this risen Jesus in this new kind of in-between form, bodily form, appears a couple of times to the disciples. But at least in John, there's no direct communication one-on-one between Jesus and Peter. Now, this has been a long introduction to what I really want to talk about. Peter in John 21 says, and I think he's just saying, I don't know what to do with all this. It's beyond my ability to process all of this. Let's just go fishing. That I understand, right? Let's do something I understand. So they go fishing. Jesus shows up walking down the beach, hollers out to them and says, hey, you guys catch anything? And this has a little bit of a familiar ring from the other Gospels, not from John, because when Jesus first asked them to follow him, he said, hey, you guys catch anything? And they answer again, no, been a terrible, terrible night. And Jesus says, well, throw it out one more time. Now that sounds very familiar too. Throw it out one more time. And they get swamped. And Peter suddenly realizes who's over there on the beach and he jumps out of the boat. And that sounds familiar too. He did that another time. He jumps out. But those are all in another gospel. None of those are in this one. And they're in a different time. He jumps out of the boat. And then Jesus says, well, let's eat. And that's familiar. Do you ever stop and think how many times Jesus is sitting eating in the gospels? Just with one person, another, friends, enemies, people who like him, people who don't like him. He just loved to open his table and be there and eat. So he says, let's eat. They have breakfast. Now, this is the first direct conversation since Peter said, I will die for you. And I just can imagine Jesus catching his eye. And I used to think, and even when I gave Kai the title to what I was going to talk about today, because this is probably how I would be prone to do it, I used to think Jesus, after they ate, just said, well, let's take a walk down the beach, and I've got something I want to talk about. As I read this again, I realized that's really not the way John reads. The way it reads is that right in front of everybody, around the campfire, Jesus starts talking to Peter. Now remember, it's the first time since the last time when they had a very intense conversation. So my question to you, what would you be feeling if you realized that you were in his shoes and somebody looked you straight in the eye and you suddenly realized, uh-oh, here it comes. What would you be feeling? You can answer out loud, or you don't have to. Guilty.
Embarrassed.
Nailed. All right. Afraid.
Anxious.
Shamed.
Small.
Yeah, you've got it. It had to be all those things, right? Had to be. So here's what happens. And you can read now, Angela, if you would. Whoops, let's back up. Can we get you on? You're on? Okay.
When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. A second time, he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me?
I just want to say a couple of words about this. People have made long books and teachings about the changes, the Greek words, and all that goes on here. But I do see a progression that I think is very important in this. The first part is it just feels so familiar. This is three times, right? From the person who said, you're going to deny me three times. That couldn't have been missed. But the progression I see is Jesus moving Peter from where it started, which was a comparison. Well, if all of them forsake you, I'll die for you. Are you really stubbornly committed to me? And Peter is smart enough and humble enough not to answer that question, but to say, you're my dear friend. I love you as a friend. You're my dear friend. And Jesus says, well, let's not talk about compared to others. Are you stubbornly committed to me? Well, he remembers what's happened. And he's smart enough not to quite answer that one exactly that way either. He says, I'm your dear friend. And Jesus says, are you my dear friend? Let's hear the answer.
And Peter said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. He said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And after this, he said to him, follow me.
Thanks, Angela. Peter responds the third time, now there's no question. Three denials, you will. He did. Third time. And I would like to suggest, and you know, people say different things about this, but I would like to suggest Peter has come to realize that it will not be his ability to carry out his stubborn commitment that will keep him in a relationship with Jesus. It'll be if they have a mutual friendship, because that's the only way he's going to make it. So he says, you know, I'm your dear friend. And Jesus says for the third time, and I'm going to trust you with what's most precious to me of anything in the world, and that's being a blessing to my people. He said that three times, too. And then Jesus tells him, and you were so quick to say you'd die for me, you will. It won't be fine. But the real issue is just follow me. I find this incredibly powerful, incredibly touching. I want my relationship ultimately to be based on that Jesus decides I'm his friend, not that I always do what I really do mean to do. Peter never knew when to quit when he was winning either. He goes ahead to say, well, yeah, but what about him over here? How's it going to work with him? And Jesus says, you know, the truth is, it's none of your business, buddy. Just follow me. So you see his strengths and weaknesses even in his best moments. I mean, he is who he is, and he grows, but he is who he is. I want to just end with what I think are five. Last week, Kai said, you got now, how do we bring this to today and your life and mine and our life together? Five things I think are really hard for us to trust, five realities that I think are really difficult for us to trust. The first one is your best stuff, your gifts, your trust, your love, your intelligence, your very best stuff is never good enough. It could always be better. And I had a conversation recently, and the first response of the person I was talking to said, well, I just can't accept that I can't ever get it good enough. And my response is, well, you better, because it's the truth. And neither has anybody I know ever gotten it good enough either, or as good as it should have been and could be. I wasn't as good a son as I should have been or could have been. I wasn't as good of a husband as I should have been and could have been. I wasn't as good a parent as I should have been and could have been. I wasn't as good a pastor of New Covenant as I should have been and could have been. Could have been wiser, could have been better, could have been more caring, could have been many things. Could have prayed more, could have cared more. always. Everybody. And I don't say that as a negative or as a shrug of the shoulders. I say that as a person who, when I stand before God and before Jesus, I want it to be based on Jesus' friendship. I don't want it to be based on that I got it all right or that I did it good enough. I think that's really hard for us to accept without kind of it being a shrug of the shoulders or despairing or kind of like, oh, well, then what's the difference? Because Jesus doesn't say to Peter, so don't try hard or don't try to work hard. He just says, it's about friendship and love, grace. So the second thing I think is very difficult for us to accept is that in spite of our failures, what all the Gospels try to communicate to us, and really all the letters in the New Testament, is that as crazy as this world gets and as confusing as it gets and the times when you can't even figure out what in the world God has to do with the reality you're in, those failures, Jesus says God forgives. God forgives. You can look him straight in the face and find forgiveness and love and even appreciation for the fact that you're trying. I think that's hard to accept in the light of the fact that I mean, you all said it. Sometimes I'm ashamed. Sometimes I feel guilty. Sometimes I'm afraid, even face-to-face with Jesus, especially face-to-face with Jesus, as Peter was, but that he really does love and forgive and even appreciate that I'm trying. Another way of saying that is that Jesus knows you and me and us and this congregation for who we really are. He's not terribly impressed when we draw our sword and start swinging, but really does love us for who we really are. And that's an incredible gift. Oh, and, you know, and wants to be with us. Follow me means come be with me. I want to be with you. Come be with me. I think it's very difficult to accept that in all of those realities, nevertheless, Jesus wants you and me and us, trust us, entrust us with feeding his sheep, with being his hands and feet and words and voice and actions in the real world. That's how he wants to be present now. And he trusts you. Does he think you won't fail? No. Does he think you won't still be the real you? No. But you are the way he wants to bless people. And that's for real. And he wants you to quit comparing yourself with other people. I've had Jesus say to me more than once, you know, that's their story. It's really not yours. What's that to you? I'll let you just reflect on those realities for a few minutes, and then I'm going to pray for us. A little bit of silent time, and then I'll pray. The Lord, as we come to this table that you had Jesus open so widely and so often say, so let's eat. Help us to bring our good intentions and our good actions, but to realize they're never really good enough, but they are appreciated. Father, help us bring our fears, our failures, our shame. And help us to receive your love for us, that you know the real us, and just as your son Jesus did, you love the real us, the real me, the real you of each person here. And help us to receive the wondrous joy of realizing that you really do mean it when you say, I know the real you, and you're a dear friend. And help us receive the freedom and the empowerment to then go out and serve you and feed your sheep. The tables are open.